Way down in Missouri, when I heard this lullaby, while the stars were blinking and the moon was shining high.
Showing Missouri this from Missouri One County at a Time. This week we are in Dallas County, founded on January 29, 1841. The 66th county formed out of 543 square miles of beautiful rolling hills in southwest Missouri. Originally founded as Niangua County, then renamed for President Polk's vice president, George M. Dallas. Some say they did it because Niangua is a little too hard to say, but we're here to ask the ladies for all this information. Sue Dial, the Historical Society, thank you so much for the time.
Well, thank you. And I would like to say on behalf of all of us, we're so honored that you're here. Thank you for coming.
Absolutely,
my pleasure. There's a lot for us to showcase, and we like to talk about it. So
absolutely.
We can keep you busy for a long time.
I'd rather do. Cookie Hawkins, also with the Historical Society, thank you so much for joining us. And you have the book on Dallas County, is that correct?
Yes, this Dallas County, Missouri history. It's a great little book, packed full of things.
I have the same book sitting on my shelf in the office in Jefferson City. And then two folks everybody's going to know, Senator Sandy Crawford, been a House member, a senator, and we were just joking before has about a quarter of the bills on the calendar this time. Coming to the end of her time in the State Senate, thank you so much for making a little time here.
Well, we appreciate you coming, Scott, and it's been a great ride, and I'm looking forward to maybe riding off into the sunset in a few months.
I'm going to put you on the spot here since we're taping. I'd like to do something. You have this big class of people leaving. I'd like to see this summer, if I could come down and interview you about your whole time.
Oh, I'd love that.
Because you just think about the changes and the crazy things you've seen.
A lot of them.
I mean, and I don't pile negative, but you've seen speakers resign, governors resign, COVID, the term limit really kick in, mm-hmm. super majorities. I mean, the time that you and Searpoy really, Lincoln also,
right,
have seen. You know, some of the other ones like Senator Brown, you know, he's only done half this tour with you. But the three of you have really, I mean, if you really stop and think about Missouri history, outside the Civil War, I'm not sure there's been more monumental things going on in the legislature than in your 16 years.
I have seen a lot, that's for sure. You know, it's interesting to me. There are four of us that walked in the door together in January of 2011 that will walk out together and a couple more.
Trigger my memory.
So you have Senator Carla May.
Yes, I had dinner with her last night.
You have Senator Mike Bernskeeter.
Yep.
Senator Mike Searpoy, myself, and then actually Senator Lincoln Huff and Senator Bratton were in the same class, but they went back home and served in county government. Yep. So that really the six of us walked in the door together, and probably five, maybe six of the six walk out together at the end of the year.
I think that is just such an interesting piece of history that you've had the front row seat for, that a lot of folks really won't. I mean, you just go back. There's not been as many things as boom, 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 historical events. Anyhow, now I put you on the spot. I appreciate it. And I will let you have some weeks after session. But sometime maybe before the state fair and veto session come in, I'd love to come and just capture some of this on audio, just your observation of your time there.
That'd be great.
I think it'd be great. If you were studying state government, I think I'd want to listen to this.
Well, coming from you, who's been around for a long time, that's saying something, but you're right. There have been so many things that have happened.
And luckily, none of the scandals have been you.
That's right. Hopefully, I can last out a few more months.
Well, good knock on wood. We got 7 or 8 more weeks to go. And then the presiding commissioner, John Crawford, active not only here in Dallas County, but Farm Bureau, State Fair. If there's a rural Missouri cause, you're around it somewhere. Thank you so much for joining us. It's an honor.
Thanks for coming in.
So I always like to talk about how the tribes. Now, I read where the Delaware and the Osage were the two predominant tribes here, but those Osage were the meanest ones, and they tended to gobble up other tribes. Were those the two, or is there another one the Osage gobbled up along the way?
I don't know the answer to that question. I wish my son were here. He's an archaeologist, but the Osage were big people.
Yes.
So, you know, they towered over everyone else. It's my understanding, just from what I've read recently, that the Indians were displaced pretty early on and moved away. So that history was really early Native American history.
Yeah.
So and of course we have great rivers and a lot of diverse geography. So it was a great place for them to live, and they did live here for a long time.
So I read where the first non-Native American to have a permanent settlement was Mark Reynolds, a Nashville native who came here around 1831 and brought his family to the area, settling on the Pomme de Terre. Now, my hillbilly dialect may butcher that river.
Potato River.
What is it now?
Potato River.
I like it. How did they name it? Why did they name it Potato River?
Because I guess probably it was an easy place to grow potatoes.
Maybe they had potatoes buried and the flood came and dug up the potatoes for them.
But that's what Pomme de Terre is potatoes.
Okay, I didn't know that either. What is now Pleasant Hope?
Not familiar too much with Pleasant Hope.
So that would be not in our county. What is now Pleasant Hope? So the Pomme de Terre, we have two major rivers, the Niangua and Pomme de Terre, that run through. Of course, Pomme de Terre ends up as in the lake, Pomme de Terre Lake, which is a great tourist destination for here. The Niangua is clearly, it's larger, so it would have been more utilized by Native Americans and then homesteaders. And if you think about it, when people moved here, like Mark Reynolds, they followed paths that were easy, you know, so they would have followed the rivers if they could. They would have followed Indian trails. They would have followed, which were built on animal trails. So there weren't any, there wasn't any good way to get here. And once you got here, you were pretty isolated. So the Niangua River was a, you know, sort of a thoroughfare for anyone traveling across the state of Missouri. And most of Missouri was founded north of here first.
Yeah.
And then moved down here. We had a lot of lead mining. I think people first came here for the land, but then the lead mining opportunities. And you know, it was a pretty, it was a frontier. You know, Daniel Boone opened things up. You know, in right after the Revolutionary War, and after that, the floodgates were open, and people just kept pushing the boundaries of the frontier, and this was it.
I originally grew up in. I did grow up in Hickory County, so the Pomme de Terre was a big part of everyday life in Hickory County as well. So I came to Buffalo when I was 18.
People forget, you know, that was their roads back in the day.
It was. I mean,
that's how, there wasn't a path through the woods. You had to get and navigate a river, and that river, I mean, now we have flooding today, obviously, but they had no flood control then. You were at the mercy of, you know, about this time of year, that river would come. It could be this nice river down the valley, but it'd be coming up in your living room for long. It's amazing to think about how the modern technologies, and really this whole state was defined in the early chapters by its rivers. And while we still have floods, and I remember when I was a kid seeing the 93 flood and everything, but that used to be an every 4 or 5 year thing. And we have the engineering that has happened is just such an amazing thing to see that you've got that river that flows by the Capitol that has stayed tame all really except for 93. I know it's had some ups, but 93 is when it really, the engineering work has been amazing. And I'm from Southeast Missouri. I mean, every town in Southeast is on top of a hill because before then there was just a swamp. You couldn't have a town down there, you know. You couldn't put a 2x4 on anything. So the first and only county seat come from around here. Before we talk about the county seat, I want to ask you, Sue, where is your family from?
Well,
how did you come to live here?
I have 12 generations of my family has lived in Dallas County. I have the privilege of having the only Revolutionary War soldier buried in Dallas County is my direct lineage
now,
relative.
What's his name?
The last name was McPheeters, Andrew McPheeters. And it sounds a little more interesting than maybe it really was. He didn't come here until he was about 90. His family drug him across at 90 years old across the Appalachian. As you know, most people that settled here were Scots-Irish and came through Tennessee and followed a specific trail. They were part of that emigration. And
he
so
was 90?
He was 90 on a wagon.
1800s.
You know, no. Yes.
Well, he was 90 years old. And he went on a wagon through the Appalachian Trail to Dallas County, Missouri.
Okay.
Well, that guy lived a Utah. We were just talking about how you'd seen a lot. That guy saw a lot.
He was very young in the Revolutionary War, and he was one of those soldiers that took other people's commission, accepted other people's commission, you know, for pay and land. I think that was kind of what they did. He was very young. So he was young when he was in the Revolutionary War, and then fast forward 90 more years. Well, 70 years, when my family emigrated here, in probably the, what we'd say, 1840s, 50s, he was on a wagon with about three other generations of my family. So he was the oldest person that came here at 90 years old. And they settled in Dallas County, and then he died here. So that's why he's buried here. And that's how it is that he could have been a Revolutionary War soldier. It was stretched pretty far.
Ms. Cookie, how did your family come live here?
My mother was from New Orleans, and my dad was from northern Missouri. But I married into the Hawkins family when I was 18 years old. They had been here for a long time, the Hawkins and O'Bannon family. So the bank, the O'Bannon Bank, was a family bank. And out of necessity, we had three children. I started working at the bank, too, quite young. As Sandy said, she worked there as well. I was there for almost 37 years. And the Hawkins O'Bannon family had been in this area for a long time. Different merchants, that they were just, they're, the O'Bannons and Hawkinses are in the history book quite a lot, so.
We're talking about people that are in banking, but I've always felt like you could mark a successful town by how many local decision makers at a bank lived in that town.
1905.
Yeah. I always thought there was a correlation by, now I'm sure every bank's had to go up and ask, but I mean, how many folks could approve a home loan in that town? I think that is a real mark of how successful your town's going to be by how many folks make those decisions with a little bit of a local, you know. I know that comes down to numbers, but on some level, that Mr. Smith goes to Washington, that Bailey Brothers home loan thing. I've always felt like you could really track Poplar Bluff, where I'm from. The success of that town has went up and down in many, many ways based off how many local decision makers in the world of finance live there.
My father-in-law was also a circuit judge.
Oh.
Traveled around all over the area. And he was the president of the bank, as his father before him had been. And people used to say that they would come in and sit at his desk, very ordinary, down-to-earth fella, and say, "Jim, I need to go buy some cattle." And he'd say, "Just go get them and come let us know later on." So that was the only bank in Buffalo for many years.
I know all the technologies and laws have been good, but there's still something to be said from that.
Sure.
About being able to say, "Oh, just go get them and let me know, and we'll settle it up."
Yeah.
You hope that way of doing business isn't gone. It just feels like it's a little further off, you know. Senator Grover, how did your family come live here in Dallas County?
You know, both sides of my family have been here for years and years. I was looking back in the history, some of my historical books that I look at for Dallas County, and the Franklin was my maiden name, and they were here back in the 1800s. So really been kind of like Sue, well, we've been here forever. And a lot of my grandmother, my dad's mother's family lived around Bennett Springs, Wendyville, and just a couple of interesting facts that I think they're interesting. My grandmother's brother used to ford people back and forth across the river at Bennett Springs. And so that's kind of a neat family story. And then also we were talking about the Indians, and my grandmother had some Indian blood in her, and I've heard them talk about how cemeteries here in Dallas County would not let anyone with Indian blood be buried in the cemetery, and they were like buried outside, and I have some family members like that.
Oh, interesting.
Robert, how did your family come live here?
Well, it's not the same way as my predecessors here have talked about. My grandpa and grandma migrated to Nebraska, and the Dust Bowl come in, and my grandpa got dust pneumonia. So the doctor told him, "You have to move south or you're going to die." So they ended up here. My dad drove for Yellow Freight, so he left here.
I've heard of that. Is that one of those things where you can't get it out of your lungs because you keep breathing it in?
Yeah.
I've heard guys that worked at, Gina Walsh told me one time, that's what they called it. But when you worked in insulation back in the day, when the more that fiberglass was in it, that fiberglass would get in your lungs. Normally you get a little bit in there, you can cough it out. Mm-hmm. But if you were doing it every day and just back and forth, you couldn't do it. They ended up having to get masks and have people work, you know, three on, four off, because it was called dust pneumonia, but it was really the same type of thing, I think. They just could never get it out of them.
Yeah. So my dad went to work at Yellow Freight up in Independence, so he whenever you ran out of hours, we'd come down here and farm back up there. But we moved down my senior year to here, and I think the reason I moved in so Sandy wouldn't have to marry some of her relations. So,
they imported y'all in. Well, you served your purpose. That's you did do that. Bit of a beast of burden, all yeah. You know. Well, when I was reading, it said there's a place called the Buffalo Head Prairie. Mm-hmm. Now, where's that? We're in downtown Buffalo right now at the courthouse annex.
Right out there where the Historical Society is.
Nice.
Right there off of 65. Yeah, we've got a museum and library.
Nice.
And there's a log cabin that had been moved in. We've got a schoolhouse that
now,
was moved in.
How do you keep them cabins? I've always wondered this. I've been to like Grant's cabin at Grant's Farm, and I've got to walk around it and look at it. I've always been so interested to see, you know, Gary Wiggins, you sir, he actually took the first courthouse from Scotland County, and he's got it in a metal building, so it's inside. But how do you keep those timbers from deteriorating?
Well, one of the Mennonites has refurbished that one more than
we've
once.
We've had to replace
Yeah, rechink everything. And
yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, it's an ongoing process.
You know, Carl Esslinger built an actual log cabin mm-hmm. down at her mm-hmm. place in Wasola. And it is one of the most gorgeous lays of land I've ever seen in my life. But it's a legitimate log cabin. And I woke up one morning, I stayed down there, and it was kind of cold, and so them wasps were looking for somewhere to be. I had three wasps buzzing right on my chest. I had a big, you know, pretty big belly, and they were making time of that, you know, kind of woke up like I was in a nightmare or something. I always thought, though, that air is tough. You got to really, you have to just coat them every year with something?
We don't with this, probably should. My father, as I stated earlier, was a builder,
mm-hmm.
and over at Pomme de Terre at the lake. I know he built, someone actually did the log cabin. I mean, brought all the big timbers in and everything. So, yeah, maintenance is very important to.
Well, now they built a log cabin, but it's all kind of cut
well,
wood,
it was cut out. Yeah, but still.
Those old logs, you know, you had to, it was mortar. It was their own type of mortar back in the day that glued them together, really, I think.
We have, I think, some cement and stuff on this one.
Yeah.
We had to, I mean, you know, just to get it all done. But
well,
it's,
they had their own form of cement then. I mean, no, those trees didn't fit together like a puzzle. You
right,
had to
right.
plug the holes all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, just for air and
I've learned
from
wasps. In fact, we've got a hole right now. We're trying to figure out what's the best way to get that one repaired. We've got an area about like so in one of them. So,
and everything will come in that, won't they?
Oh, yeah. Sue and I usually go out at least twice a year and move things out and around and clean and
you get some air circulating in there.
Yeah. We're open on the first and third Thursdays of each month out there, and we open up the buildings so that people can come and look and actually go inside. We've had festivals out at the park, and it's sometimes we say it's the best kept secret in Dallas County because people say, well, where is it? And you drive right past it every day. It's on Highway 65, but in conjunction with the other buildings, the railroad that almost was in Dallas County.
Oh yeah, we're going to talk
part of the bed goes through where the park is, and we have a caboose sitting on part of the old railroad bed out there. So yeah, it'd be worth your while to come out and.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd
love to have you come out. But anyway, then Julie Thomas, who has since passed, she donated a bell. And the belfry to put the bell, so when kids come out often, youth groups and everything, they love to ring that big bell out there. Recently got another bell donated to us. So, and then a fellow down at Tunis, Missouri, who was a mail carrier, had one of the Mennonites build a small mail post office. And a few years ago, he donated that to us. So we've got a post office out there now. So
with an extensive collection of postal
lots memorabilia. Of memorabilia. So it's a place that people ought to come and spend some time at for sure.
Yeah, I love.
We also
love the
have a pavilion with picnic tables, so people can come and sit and eat.
Well,
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, ma'am.
It definitely reflects and showcases the community's passion for their history and their the region and their roots.
Well, we're sitting in the annex of the courthouse. Your courthouse had some trouble, I tell you. I was reading how that Levi Beckner was hired to build the first courthouse in 1846. And then that was a challenging time to build a courthouse, right? Because 1863, the Confederates come through and burnt it, right?
More than once. Yep.
And we'll talk about that. Then the fire destroyed two more temporary ones. And then in 1868, I thought this was interesting. I read where the county appointed a dentist, Eleazar Hovey, to kind of be the superintendent over this project. Now, that name sticks out. And he gave him $15,000, and then every commissioner. I've never met a commissioner that wouldn't grind their teeth and hands when this story ends. He put a 44-by-60 brick building up, and they accepted it in June 1870, but they had two change orders. Now, that's old-time change order, 1868, and the final cost was $17,500. Now, that a $2,500 change order probably don't send much today, but back then, that was the sixth of the project, right? Yeah, yeah. I mean, have you ever... I've never met a commissioner that, well, the word change orders didn't get them just start to...
I'd love if a change order was $2,000, you know what I mean? It's $2,000 just to write it on the paper, you know what I mean?
Boy, I tell you what, the more change they stay the same. You your predecessors in 1860 are doing the same thing I bet you deal with this month. Finally put together... The brick building was accepted, then it was renovated in 1837, and then fire got that one too by 1955. Most people listening to this, you will have seen this courthouse, and you've seen it in the Thomas Hart Benton painting, County Politics. You might not know it was the Dallas County Courthouse, but the courthouse you've seen in that famous one, there's two. One is County Politics of them electioneering. There's another great one of announcing the election results. And I've heard from different folks that might have been, where's Hamilton at? Up in Northwest Missouri. Dadgum. Beautiful courthouse.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's not the county seat. It's where Far West is. We've been there. But it's got that beautiful balcony kind of looking south. And they used to read the election results to the public, would kind of make it a... Everybody go to the courthouse square, and it'd be a party, and they'd come out and read the results, and somebody would be happy and somebody wouldn't be. And Thomas Hart Benton, the thing I liked about Thomas Hart Benton's paintings, he didn't just have a painting of the winner being happy. He'd put the loser in there too, being, you know, cross and down. I always thought that takes it from a nice painting to something that's meaningful, because it kind of has an element of reality to it. Voters approved a $250,000 bond in September 1955. And that's the courthouse that you have today, correct? And you've had, as government's grown and county governments have grown, you've kind of come across the street and around, and that's pretty normal in courthouses anymore, right?
Yeah, because building is so expensive, you know what I mean? And once we've got a very nice courthouse, we remodeled it in 24 to update it from 1955. It needed an update, but we needed more room. I mean, with more things going on, you need more room.
Well, yours is like a lot of them. I mean, you're on the square. There ain't no place to move. There's no. the street covers around. There's no place to go except across the street.
Yep.
Then the Civil War here. I was reading, there's not a ton of activity here. I guess the place wasn't as developed as some of the other folks, and you're close to Springfield where they had some major battles, but it said it was a pretty divided loyalty. When you had Union and Confederate, but from what I was reading, it wasn't really as much on were you a row crop farmer or were you a rancher. It was kind of what your family, you know, kind of family lineage. Where did you come from, and did you still have family back in Tennessee, or had you kind of migrated, and did you still have connections with them? What would you say this was, a Union County, Confederate County, divided?
Well, that I don't know. I would like to think it was Union. My family was all served in the Union Army. but we did not experience, we did experience some, but maybe not the kind of violence that took place like south of here in Branson, you know, the Bald Numbers. And I mean, that just was decimated. I mean, that whole area was just wiped out. We experienced some of that. We had some of that activity down around the rivers and, you know, again, the homesteading areas. There are some specific stories of violence, you know. It was a tough time and a tough place to be in the Civil War. Yeah. I don't think any other state in the Union experienced the kind of
Well, there wasn't nobody to call for help.
The clash of differing opinions and the violence that was associated with it, not just during the Civil War, but after the Civil War. You know, it remained, you had marauders from Kansas to, you know, southern Missouri taking out their, you know, displeasure at the way things turned out,
it's
even after that.
It's such an interesting thing about how you go through and you see the bushwhackers come in. Mm-hmm. Essentially, you can say they're for a cause. Most of them were taking advantage of a lawless situation. And then the bald knobbers come because they were nobody would do anything about the bushwhackers, or they mm-hmm. felt that way. So these bald knobbers come and they just start killing these people. Mm-hmm. And then the whole region gets tired of them because then they start taking advantage of the mm-hmm. fact they have the strongest man. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't have law and order, as the guy that spent the night in St. Louis last night, it really is really a tale of what happens. The strong do take advantage of the weak without some sort of rules-based laws.
Mm-hmm. It was a difficult time for Missourians all across the state. Again, spending all the way to Kansas.
Well, wherever they're law and order maintained, usually in the cities, mm-hmm. law and order could be maintained. But it's funny, like today, if you had a group of crazy bushwhackers coming and sacking farms and burning, they wouldn't get very far until somebody called somebody and a group of people with more guns mm-hmm. converged on them. But that, there was nobody to call back then. Mm-hmm. You were 30. How long would it take to ride a horse to Springfield mm-hmm. right now? Or Bolivar, I guess, is where the...
Well, you don't think about that unless you think about it. Yeah. You know, one of the reasons Dallas County came into being at all was because the closest courthouse was in Bolivar for mm-hmm. the people, you know, across this county. So one of the things that people in Dallas County wanted was a closer county government building where they could come. And, you know, in that day, just to get from the far corners of what is now Dallas County to Buffalo to the courthouse, it'd be a three-day deal. You'd have to get there one day and do your business the next day and leave the next day. So you'd have to stay overnight or camp or whatever. But it was a pretty big deal to have a more convenient county government building, which is how Dallas County basically yep. came into being.
Half a day's help horse ride, right? So you could ride your horse to the courthouse and come back. Kind of mm-hmm. how they, that was always the loose thing about how it was. Is anyone in the county should be able to have a half a day's horse ride so they go and come back and be back before dark.
And, you know, you were talking about it being Niagara County. Actually, if you lived in a certain part of what is now Dallas County, you could have been in five different counties in 10 years because it changed.
Yeah.
There were parts of it that became Webster and then Crawford and then Dallas. So it was a shifting of the lines. But the overarching reason for developing the county in the first place or wanting the county was to have a more convenient county government courthouse.
So 1863, right? General Shelby come through and burn the courthouse. Why?
Because
records.
Okay.
I think they wanted to destroy, it really hurt a community if you destroyed the records. And sometimes there were records in there that they wanted destroyed.
Yeah.
So I think it was more about destroying records and crippling.
There's always the Mississippi County story that the FBI had made an appointment to visit Mississippi County government and how they were counting votes. And the night before, somehow, there was a fire in the courthouse, and it burnt the records. And it burnt a lot of the courthouse, but every prisoner, somehow, they let them out right away. Mm-hmm. Nobody died, but all the records the FBI wanted to talk about just had to be gone that night. And nobody ever really got in trouble for any of it. I guess there was no, it helps when there's no records,
yeah,
I guess.
That's right.
You know? But they were nice enough. The prisoners were in the basement of that courthouse at the time. Beautiful courthouse. It's pretty now. It's not as pretty as it was. But then this was in the 90s. This was. They started kind of voting a little Republican, and they weren't real thrilled about that in Mississippi County. And so then the record was gone of whatever ballots happened, that was all out. And then they said there's a lot of skirmishes and various actions took place, including an attempt by Union forces to fortify the courthouse in Buffalo. But really, there was a Union Home Guard units kind of came after they did the courthouse, and mm-hmm. it felt like when they burnt the courthouse, a lot of the county swept it to the Union pretty sharply, mm-hmm. because I think they felt like they were not a problem, and why would you just do that? And I think they were pretty sore about that. Then they had the guerrilla warfare and stuff, but were spared a lot of the major problems. I want to talk about the railroad. What an interesting concept. So, folks in Dallas County decided they would come together and put up $250,000, which was, gosh, I didn't even know how much money that'd be back then, to bring the railroad through. Now, what is the story there? Because it's complicated, and there's different accounts.
It is very complicated, but in my mind, I've had to simplify it just from hearing and reading, and I can't tell you everything that happened. It was back and forth and back and forth. You have to go back to why would they want a railroad, and that's pretty obvious. We are the only inland county, I think, in Missouri that doesn't have any railroad or water served by any kind of transportation, bus lines or anything. So having a railroad is pretty important to your economy, especially if you're an ag community and you want to load cattle and pigs and chickens up on, you know, on the rail cars. So getting a railroad was a pretty big deal, and they thought that they were going to get a railroad, and they signed some papers, and in my opinion, everything that happened was a result of they didn't read the fine print, which, you know, how many among us have signed something that we didn't read every... I don't think there was any ill intention. I think they wanted only the best for our community. They just simply did not read the fine print, and when lawyers became involved, and so when the railroad company defaulted on what they said they were going to do, and the money was already given to them, and we couldn't get it back, you know, people started reading, what did you sign, and what did the fine print say, and I think that's where it all. But the ramifications of that, unfortunately, you were talking earlier, and it made me think, you were talking about all the counties that you visited, and how some counties, you know, why are they successful or maybe not successful, and it being good leadership and those kinds of things. In our case, someone asked me one time, how has the history of this county affected what it is today? Well, at that time, the county was saddled with $200,000 worth of bonds that they had to pay. Well, it wasn't just that. There was all kinds of penalties and mm-hmm. all kinds of,
roasted,
I mean,
millions.
We got wailed on yeah. financially. So at a time when, you know, the whole economy is different and the value of money is different, we had in the 1800s for the next 60 years, at the time when other counties were growing and prospering, we were saddled with this tremendous debt that was just like an albatross on our county, and that we had to just slowly dig our way out from under. And then I think in the 1940s or 50s, we finally burned the last bond. But that was a huge, that definitely changed the trajectory of, and it, if you think about the leaders and people that we had, they were good leaders. And they were tenacious, and they dug us out, and we made it. But it did change probably some of the things that we might have done otherwise had we not had been saddled with that tremendous amount of debt at that time in our county's history.
The short story is they put together a bond, and then the railroad went defunct?
Yes.
And never came through. I mean, I think you could.
They came through and they built the grade, and there's evidence of the grade. And our, as Cookie said, our historical society has a piece of that grade going through it, and we actually have a caboose car that they were giving away back in the 80s. They were giving, you know, if you wanted one in your county, they'd bring you one, and it's sitting on a piece of track on that grade. So they got the grade built. They just never. For whatever reason, that I don't really remember, that's not the part of the story that anybody ever seems to remember, why they defaulted or said they no longer were going
to
do it. But
a little harder to build railroad around here than it is where I'm from, where it's as flat as it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Well, right.
It's exactly. Really the easiest in North Missouri, because in South Missouri you have sand to build on. Mm-hmm. They have good ground, and it's all flat up there. I would think, you know, I think if you took a map of the state out, and one of the old railroad maps, you could tell why the state's grown where it's grown. Mm-hmm. Those interstates follow a lot of those train tracks. Mm-hmm. And where those where those interstates are today is where the most growth is. Mm-hmm. I think that's a fact that is not hard to reach out and prove. It's just one of those things where if you have the infrastructure, you have the growth, and if you don't, you don't.
One interesting fallout from that over time was the fact that, we're a deep-rooted ag community, you know, every animal that has to be shipped across the nation on rail tracks, we had to drive our animals either to Lebanon or to Springfield to a railhead to get them on, you know, the trains. And there are some interesting stories about all kinds of animals, including a flock of turkey being driven to Springfield and put on the train because that's the only way you could get your animals to market.
Greasy Creek. I think the reason they called it Greasy Creek was the load of hogs
turned over
in the it sounds appropriate, doesn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't greasy before, it's greasy.
Greasy now, Greasy Creek. No. On the corner, one corner of the courthouse lawn, there's that sign that tells all about that too. So you want to make sure you read that.
Yeah, I will.
It's a big,
it's right there.
Big, yeah.
It's right
here. Now, I found an interesting note. This is one of the things that sometimes I find is real and sometimes ain't. It's a thing called Friendship Community. It has an interesting history. It was founded by Alexander. I think that means Alexander. It might be Alexander Longley. March 15th, 1872. Mm-hmm. It's a community a few miles west of Buffalo. He was the editor of The Communist, a newspaper dedicated to social communism, I guess. The community owned 500 acres of land and lived as one family, with the men and women having equal rights, owning everything in common, voting on their affairs. Apparently, it was kind of just left alone. Nobody bothered him too much. And then, as most communism is, it disbanded about 8 years later and just kind of walked away, and it no longer exists. But I guess that was about 6 miles west of town?
I have read of that, and it's in this book. I don't know that anybody has been able to really track down a whole lot of, but there was a group, there were actually two or three of these, what we would call communes in the area. They were usually based around an orchard where they would have, they would do business, you know, they would make a living off of orchard crops, which actually was pretty big in our county, orchards. But that's not the only one. There were a couple of those. They usually didn't last very long.
Yeah.
I don't know much about them, and I don't know that anyone's been able to find out much about them.
Well, this one apparently they just kind of walked off from it. Folks started, I guess it, you know, they
finally like, ran out of somebody else's money.
That's what I was going to say. That
a bad year for apples or something. Yeah. I don't know.
We're going to come back after this, talk about Dallas County today here on Show Missouri History, Missouri One County Time. First, I want to thank our sponsors, Missouri Farm Bureau, Missouri Association of Electric Co-ops, and the folks at the county MAC. Let us come to places like Dallas County and talk about the history of the county, and we'll pick back up with Dallas County Today after this.
We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the Missouri way of life. We're for worrying less about the what-ifs and more about the why-nots. We're for checking off your bucket list and then making a new one. For starting a family, a business, a tradition. And if you find yourself starting over, we're here for that too. We're for building a life in Missouri and then going out and living it. And when it comes to making sure everything you've built is protected, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance.
The Show Me Missouri podcast is brought to you by our friends at HALO, Heartland Area Landowners. HALO is a membership-based organization for folks interested in farming the sun and the wind. HALO members are passionate about their land, our world, and stewarding the resources that feed America, power, and its economy. Farming the sun and wind has incredible benefits for farmers, landowners, and all Missouri communities, all while helping secure America's energy independence. To learn more about HALO and how you can get involved, visit heartlandowners.farm. That's heartlandowners.farm. Welcome back to Show Missouri, the History of Missouri, one county at a time. We are in Dallas County with Sue from the Historical Society. Thank you so much for sticking with us.
Thank you for letting us get you back in touch with your hillbilly roots.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I don't get far. Cookie Hoggins, also at Logos Orient, thank you so much.
Thank you. We're just happy to always talk about our county.
And then two of the most famous residents of this county, Senator Sandy Crawford, her husband, Presiding Commissioner John Crawford. Thank you all for sticking around with us. All right, Senator, start off with ag.
Ag.
What is the breakdown now? Row crops, ranchers?
With our county, we've got diverse places. There's some row crop area here, not a lot of it. Mostly rolling hills. We grow grass really good, so it's cow-calf areas, raising cattle. So
good time to be in that business.
Oh, man, right now.
Not always been.
Not always been, but right now it is.
About a year ago, it started. About 2 years ago, it started to turn. About a year ago, it got good.
Yeah.
Hopefully, it'll stay that way for a while.
Yeah, for a while, the way it looks. But, yeah, we're an agriculture area. A lot of, I mean, if you aren't in agriculture in Dallas County, probably you're not in it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's an interesting time in agriculture. I remember Charlie Cruz. Mm-hmm. He bought a bunch of hamburgers one time. Or maybe they was left over, I think. And I was a staffer. And he had texted a few of us, and we set out in front of the Capitol where the press lot is now. It wasn't the press lot then. And we were sitting there just leaning up on his thing. He had coolers and sodas. And he's telling, boys, I want you to listen to me. He was about the time he's about to quit at Farm Bureau. He's about to move on. He goes, you know, property rights. If we get people to leave us alone on our land, that's the number one thing. And it's such an interesting time in the property rights discussion. And in places like Dallas County, I think it's fair to say these solar data center projects, other folks don't like them, but it comes down to these are the same folks saying you shouldn't run a grain belt through people's mm-hmm. land. It's not easy. I mean, it's not an easy answer to any of this stuff, but it is an interesting time in rural Missouri, in the ag community, because are we for property rights? Because if we're only for property rights when you're doing what we want you to do with your land, that's not really property rights. Because one day somebody will be in charge that don't want you to have a cattle farm on your land. And they'll be well-intentioned and all that, and they can have public support. It's an interesting time. I never really thought. I got in late one night. I was coming back across that bridge, and I always cut through by the Capitol because I kind of like to look at it. It's mm-hmm. nice, especially at night. And I drove through that lot, and I was thinking, you know, I remember Charlie Cruz telling us all that. At the time, I thought, well, it's always been okay. That's what Charlie said. Well, it's always be for that, right? But it's getting complicated. The world's getting complicated. And it's getting complicated. It's always been kind of complicated in St. Louis, Kansas City. Our world's getting complicated.
It is. And, you know, that was one of the main reasons I ran for presiding commissioner, going along with my wife on the 9 counties that she's senator mm-hmm. of. I saw a lot of planning and zoning. And, again, people saying, hey, we can't even do with our land what we want to do.
Yeah.
We're held up. Well, I didn't want to see that for Dallas County because in agriculture,
yeah.
you start oh, talking about that. They want to tell you what you can do. And our area has grown. The laying egg production is very big in our area. So that has changed our agriculture stuff. And I get calls a lot of times whenever a new chicken house is going to be built. Hey, we don't want it next to us. You need planning and zoning. And I say, well, you know, if you get... You don't like chickens. What if they say, I don't like your cows?
Yeah.
Well, they'll never say that. They'll never say, it's just a short step away.
We'd have folks in rural Missouri against property rights.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying that the fact is the current debate in Jeff City is a very odd debate to be having. And there's some very strange bedfellows aligning on stuff. And like, what?
Yeah.
I guess I'm just simple. And so I've always just thought, well, get your land.
Yeah.
Which one with it?
Yeah. But that's one of the reasons I tell people a lot of times, you know, farmers love to go to their farm and just be able to farm. And now, if you don't have somebody up there lobbying for you, looking out for things, they can change what you're able to do on your farm. And that's where Farm Bureau comes in, cattlemen's and different ones that are up there lobbying for us in our agriculture area.
I do not envy you on some of the boards you're on and some of the things you're involved with. I do not envy Garrett right now. Because it is a complicated issue with a bunch of different sides and a bunch of different folks that are normally on one side that are on the other side.
The big money of solar has changed. Hey, why can't I do that on my land if I want to? And and that's one of the, I agree with that. You should be able to. But if that affects the guy next to you, now you've stepped over a line on his rights.
It's complicated.
It is.
I tell you, I do not envy... I mean, I understand where a lot of the city folks come down. I get they want to tell you what to do all the time. Yeah. They live right on top of each other. I get that. But it is interesting, and I think it's only going to get more complicated for people in rural Missouri to decide how they're going to come down. Are we going to maintain our strict property rights thing? Because I'm with you. I 100% believe you will see. I remember so vividly the first year I worked in the Capitol was the last year the Democrats had the majority. They had the governor's office, they had both chambers, and they'd had them for so long. They'd mm-hmm. had the governor's office at that time for 11 years. They had the majority for 50 in the legislature. And nobody could really fathom what... The best way I had it explained to me, Jim Matheson said it was like Vietnam mm-hmm. in Hanoi. Nobody could really believe we were having to get swept out of here. Mm-hmm. And he, and I believe that, I will live long enough to see the Republicans in the same way. And if you think somebody won't tell you what to do with your cattle farm, I don't see that.
And that's probably where, I mean, one of the things that I see in our county due to COVID, we had a lot of people move out of St. Louis, Chicago, and come this way because you could get out of there and do what you wanted to do, you know what I mean? And so that has changed some of the questions that have come to the commissioner is saying, hey, I come from the city and I want this to be in your county. I don't want what the city has.
I hear people in Texas, though, that a lot of California people move to Texas. And they leave because they don't want all the California policies. But then they come to Texas and they want to do them in Texas. What'd you just move for? My concern is, I've seen that in a lot of places in the state. A lot of places in the cities after COVID are like, I'm not dealing with this anymore.
Yeah.
But then they come to places like Dallas County and they're like, well, but we want to do things. Yeah. That, and it's like, why don't you just left. Yeah. There's a reason you moved here. Let's talk, Senator Grover, tell me about the schools here in Dallas County.
Well, we have some really great schools here. The last few years, we've made a lot of improvements. I think one of the shining stars in our school district is DCTC, our tech school. And it is first class, second to none.
Yeah,
and we
I've
do,
heard of that.
You know, I hear a lot of, I obviously meet with a lot of construction people and things like that. And nothing makes me more proud than for them to say, you're from Dallas County and we get kids out of that school and they're ready to go.
Okay, I'm going to tell a story on you.
Uh-oh.
I sat in the gallery one day. And they had a school bill come up. And you happened to be just sitting at your desk. I don't know how you did that at the time. If you happened to be there, if you had a shift to keep a couple people on the floor. And a senator from St. Louis decided to inquire of you. And you were being no trouble to him. You were just sitting there. And he decided he was going to try to grief you about the schools in Dallas County, in your district. And he was a very nice, he's a nice man. I don't really know what he was thinking because it did not appear to me that you were his problem on his particular piece of legislation. He inquires of you and he starts kind of giving you grief about the schools not performing. And he had them, ones weren't even in your district, and he had his facts just bad. And he got about halfway in and realized he was too far from the shore to turn back and didn't know what to do. And you just kept being nice, and everything he said was just objectively, it wasn't opinions. He was reading statistics that were just had nothing to do with you. He had the wrong senator, and you were nice to him. But I just remember, like, them folks, them city people, didn't worry about their schools and not worry about Dallas County. And you were very nice to him, but I could tell at a part of this, you were starting to get ticked off because he must have got his papers mixed around. And he was trying to read somebody else's district to you. You were like, well, no, Senator, that's not my district. I don't know where that is. Maybe. You know. Do you remember that day?
I do remember that day.
Why did he pick you?
I don't know if it was just because I happened to be sitting there and he saw me. I was pretty I was pretty nearby his desk, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe he was probably going to pick several people. I just happened to be the one that
I don't think
he
picked anybody
at.
After you. And it was so funny. I just remember thinking, man, you were causing yourself problems. I think I'd just be quiet.
That's good.
So tell me about that. How do folks get power? Co-ops?
We're supplied here in the city of Buffalo by investor-owned utility, Liberty Utilities, mm-hmm. and they've had some problems. And Southwest Electric and Laclede Electric co-ops. So and they do the rural parts, basically, of our county. And they do a very good job.
I found some notable folks here. Philip Bennett Allen, Congressman, Senator, Lieutenant Governor. I seen Miranda Maverick, a UFC fighter.
Mm-hmm. Up north toward
Tunis? Yeah, yep. pretty
got a lot of
skinny lady. And, yeah. And sometimes she can fight, though.
Yeah, don't get in the ring with her.
Yeah. And then Hugh Alexander. I thought it was an interesting story. He was a Major League Baseball player with the Cleveland Indians, got injured. I think he got hit. Something happened to his eye. And he was injured somehow, and he became one of the best scouts, and he kind of innovated Major League Scouting after he got injured. He worked till he died in scouting for different baseball teams and was one of the most sought-after scouts around. And now I want to thank our sponsors one more time before I ask folks my favorite question. The Missouri Farm Bureau, the Missouri Association of Counties, the Missouri Association of Electric Co-ops. Let's come talk about the history of places like Dallas County. Sue, where would you take someone if you brought them to Dallas County? What would you show them?
I probably would choose to take someone to Bennett Springs State Park. It is the embodiment of everything we are in Dallas County and in Missouri, as far as I'm concerned. It incorporates, you know, the outdoors. It incorporates river history, Civil War history, Native American history, milling history, water history. I mean, it's just all there, and there's a lot to do there. There's heritage skills of fishing and all of the outdoor activities. It's just kind of a one-stop shop. It is the one of the first state parks formed in the state of Missouri in 1925. They just celebrated their 100th year anniversary. It is also the second most attended park, and that's just based on when people buy tags and camp there. It's or stay there. It doesn't even include day use of, you know, from the region. So it's just a really great place to take a family, and the DNR and the MDC do a great job of taking care of that park. There's a great staff down there. I mean, they really are dedicated and passionate and about what they do. It's just a great place to take anyone.
I've been down to the Jones camp down there.
Oh, yeah.
We have a great time and occasionally catch a fish or two. Where would you take somebody here in Dallas County?
Probably down to Selt, the Tunis area. Back in the mid-60s, early 60s, Mennonites moved into this area, Amish Mennonites. And I know because I had, about 61 years ago, I gave birth to twins and needed some help at home, and actually hired one of the Amish Mennonite gals to come, and she would get up with her dad every morning and milk and still be at my house by 7 o'clock to help, became a lifelong friend. But it didn't go over real well all the time when they first came into the area, because if you know any history about them, there'll be a lot, and then they'll move on, part of them, to another area. But down in the Selt area, the reason I take people, they have bakeries, grow flowers, lots of big farms and gardens in the area. Most of them don't have electricity, or at least a lot of them don't. But it's just really diverse down there. Horse and buggies, bicycles. It just, and of course down in there, it's rolling hills. So yeah,
that's so pretty.
It is. It's
beautiful. I come down to St. Louis this morning. Come over from Lebanon, and I tell you that is one of the prettiest drives in the state.
It is. It's just gorgeous down there.
Yeah, every hill you go over, every turn you go around, you see something prettier than the last one. Mm-hmm. Cinder, where would you take somebody if you brought them here?
You know, I'd hate to steal Sue's thunder, but Bennett Springs was the first thing that came to my mind, and mainly because I have the family history there. And you know, the park is beautiful, and you know, it's kind of has some issues right now with the hatchery and all that. But I think they've got somebody new hired to, you know, to fix that. But one of the things I'm probably most proud of that I've been involved in since I've been in state government is making sure that new bridge is getting put in. They were going to close the where the Bramwell Bridge was, the walking bridge, they were going to close that completely down to traffic, and that's our Dallas County entrance to the park. And so they wanted just foot traffic on it, so we were able to put some money in the budget to do a driving bridge also. And along with that, the walking trail that's being put in there, the sidewalks that are going to run from the campgrounds clear to the store. And so I'm really excited that I've been able to put some dollars toward Bennett Springs. But, you know, the family connection is pretty interesting to me. And then also, just kind of a fun fact, the Bramwell Bridge, the wooden bridge, Representative Deaton's wife was a Bramwell, and so he has connections to Bennett Springs as well.
That don't hurt nothing.
That's right. That's right.
You know, it is. I always say it's why you need representatives and you need senators that are in their communities. If you just leave it to the folks in Jeff City, they don't mean bad, but they don't think about that's the Dallas County entrance to the park.
I mean, right.
Sometimes those details are lost if you don't live here. You know what I mean?
Well, we drove down to Bennett, I don't know, probably about couple months ago to start with, and so I made sure when I went back to the Capitol that Monday that I tracked down Representative Deaton and gave him an update, because we've both been very interested in keeping the Bramwell Bridge for the history, but actually having a driving bridge
It was funny, every time I go on March 1st, it's freezing. And every time I don't go, it's a great day, and it's about, you know, it's 50 degrees. But if I go, it'll be 35 degrees every morning.
You weren't there this year, were you?
No, it was nice. No,
three of the four of us were there that morning.
I took Gussie on a trip to Chicago, and I got a text from Caleb, oh, it's nice here. He had on a Hawaiian shirt, and I'm like, if I was there, it would have been freezing. I have never been when it wasn't miserably cold. And every time I don't go, it's wonderful. So maybe they'll quit inviting me. John, where would you take somebody here in the county?
Boy, that would be a million-dollar question. I will say that the spring, many times, is said Laclede County tries to take it over, but the spring is in Dallas County.
Yeah.
So, again, I'd like to take part of their thunder away that our spring, the spring itself is in there. I would probably say, hey, hang with me for a while. I'll show you a lot of diverse things mm-hmm. about agriculture. We not only have, we have cervid raised, captive deer. We have large egg producing, you know, cattle, hogs, some row crop. I mean, you could get a diverse thing. We're in agri-ready county, and one of the first ones that joined in there to say, hey, if you're involved in agriculture, this is the place you ought to be.
I love it. Thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate the hospitality. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed the visit. We appreciate the time. We want to thank our sponsors again, Missouri Farm Bureau and the Missouri Electric Co-ops. Let us come to places like Dallas County and talk about the history of Missouri one county at a time, this time here in Dallas County.
Way down in Missouri, when I heard this lullaby, while the stars were blinking and the moon was shining high.